Saturday, March 18th, began early and was one of the busiest days of my White House years. Breakfast at 7:30 and comb and planning the day's scenario with Liz. And then at 10 o'clock, into the Yellow Oval Room to meet a student group from Texas. Brought here by the Texas State Society, Forrest Busby, the entrepreneur and planner, for their annual brunch, its purpose being to honor the campus generation in Texas. First, I would do it for Buzz. Second, for Texas, and especially the university. And third, most importantly, for young people, because this was a chance to show another face of young people and another face of Texas. We have so much to be proud of. The honor guests were the University of Texas College Bowl team, which just won the championship on TV against teams from other major colleges in a contest of academic knowledge that was really a cliffhanging thriller, as good as any football game. Dr. Ransom had the light from the tower turned orange when they won. Then there was Betty Ann Buckley, who did musical comedy type songs. Pretty, she'd been Miss Fort Worth. Mary Lewis Summers of Baylor, with a good opera voice. She twice won regional finalist in the Metropolitan Opera tryout. And Larry Farrar from Lyndon's own San Marcos, a handsome operatic baritone. And last and most exciting to the young folks, the North Texas Lab Band, with experiments in jazz and contemporary music. Winners of jazz festivals, very popular with the mod young folks. A unique, way-out sort of a group, some with beards and an alien look, and therefore less simpatico to me. I greeted them at the door of the Yellow Room, Buzz proudly introducing them. Coffee and sweet rolls and conversation. And I told them how this, for me, was only the second best thing I would like most to be at that performance on Sunday. Except I had that once-in-a-lifetime chance to get away for the vacation to the Isles of Paradise at Camille Bay. And then Lyndon came in, breaking away from the governors for a few minutes, and talked quietly and earnestly to them. I do not think the most supercilious could have called him patronizing. I was grateful and proud. Much of the time, he uses his minutes so skillfully, not always. He was in and out here in a flick of time, leaving him, I believe, impressed, more understanding. Things to remember about it? The tale of how the jazz band had made a 30-day tour of Mexico, going especially into the backcountry small towns, and their warmly enthusiastic greetings everywhere. Getting a verification from Betty Lynn Buckley that it was her mother, Theta Sigma Phi, who had persuaded me to come down to their celebrity banquet in Fort Worth in April of 1960, practically my jumping-off point for the campaign and for many speeches since. I gave them some vignettes of the Yellow Room, and then with a guide, started them into the Lincoln Room and the Queen's Room, and said goodbye, and went down to see the governor's wives. We were congregating on the ground floor for coffee and rolls and greetings, and then our bus trip. Our staff was busy putting on that very civilized aid of today's social gatherings, a name tag. And of course, there was that flurry of excitement about meeting certain ones. What would Mrs. Lester Maddox be like? She was very nice, and pleasure, as always, in seeing Happy Rockefeller, who is one of the warmest and friendliest of all the governor's wives. She told me she'd been anxious to come to the coffee and would surely be at the luncheon, but that the doctor just wouldn't let her go on the long bus ride. Her baby is still very young. To be able to say no graciously and make people think you wanted to say yes is a prime social asset. And laughing, exuberant Betty Hughes. I had the keenest interest in meeting Mrs. Winthrop Rockefeller. She and her husband, the only Rockefellers I don't know. We walked out together and boarded the buses, which were decorated with the pink paper flowers left over from Lucy's wedding and also used at Lindbergh's party of Princess Irene. I told the governor's wives this laughingly, saying I hoped they'd realize they had a thrifty administration. Our destination was Gravelly Point, an empty stretch of land along the Potomac on the Virginia side on your way in from the National Airport, where we had 54 white flowering dogwoods ready for the last spadeful of dirt, one for each state and territory. We'd planned for all the governor's wives to throw in that dirt simultaneously, filled in by a fanfare from the Navy band, while a monstrous number of cameras clicked away, the state flags flying, and the smiling ladies planting against the blue sky and the Potomac beyond and the Capitol Dome. Good picture, good setting, but alas for the best laid plans. The trees were as much as two blocks apart, So we walked through mud to the shoe tops, and the temperature was a freezing 29 with a biting wind and white caps on the Potomac. With chattering teeth and varying good humor, the ladies planted their trees anything but simultaneously. Not many cameras clicking. Besides, the widest lens couldn't have gotten us all at once. And, of course, for the press, the big news was that there was nobody to plant Alabama's tree. Since Mrs. Wallace naturally was in with the other governors, the protocol business of Lurline and George Wallace was a field day for the press, naturally. Trudy Fowler had been the tour guide on the bus I'd been riding on. I changed to the other, where James Freeman told us what we were passing. Cherry trees and willows around Haynes Point. The double allee of Sulangianas from Pennsylvania headed toward Anacostia. Freeway planting. The sophisticated brick paving. The crepe myrtle of New York Avenue. One of the schools. Many of the small triangles and circles where the streets meet. It was supposed to be a capsule story of the work of our beautification committee in the 2 years of its life. Actually, we did not make an A on this wonderful opportunity, and I felt frustrated at the loss. Lancaster, who does almost everything superbly, had somehow gotten too much in this script. Too many details about this is the executive office building or the Department of Justice for this sophisticated audience that had been here many times. And also too much just plain talk, because largely they wanted to look at each other, size each other up. But Jane and Trudy rallied. Great presence of mind, shortening and putting in plugs for the achievements of the committee. We arrived at the State Department, bloody and hungry, at 1 o'clock, and all of us made a beeline for the bathroom and stacks of paper towels. The real picture of the day would have been in the ladies' room, with 12 lavatories in a row and 12 governor's wives washing their shoes. The State Department was a superb setting. The furniture, the dining room, beautiful. But once more, I was aware of the excellences of the White House. The flowers did not have the delicate, imaginative grace of ours. The lunch was fair. The seating had been very sensibly arranged by drawing numbers out of a hat. And I found myself pretty Mrs. Paul Johnson of Mississippi. We talked of that lovely governor's mansion. Mrs. Pawanski, we reminisced about Keneal and my joy in going there again tomorrow. And Mrs. Robert McNair of South Carolina, who made a warmly favorable impression on me by speaking admiringly, devotedly of her predecessor, Virginia Russell.